I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Katie Lambert.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And it's getting closer to Halloween, so we're getting a little bit spookier in our series. Sarah had a really good pick for today.
Well, and this is a popular listener suggestion, too, so it's not exactly my pick. But in the late 1830s, London and its outlying villages, places that are suburbs now, were apparently terrorized by this mystery assailant. And sometimes he was dressed as a bear or a devil or dressed in a coat of armor. And he tormented his victims, who were usually young women, by tearing at them with sharp talons, sometimes shooting flames at them, and then he would escape with great agility across the countryside.
And that agility earned him the name of Spring-Heeled Jack, which was something people eventually began to take literally, like he was running around in these shoes with giant springs on the bottom. But he made such an impression on people across the country that other mystery attacks, 10 years, 40 years, even 70 years later, were chalked up to this spring man who grew even more fantastic as the decades went by.
Yeah, and he started to appear in penny dreadfuls, which were
the best phrase. It makes me so happy.
It's cheap, lurid fiction, I guess.
Which makes me less happy, but Penny
Still,
Dreadfuls is the name of our next imaginary
be
band.
Fun to read through. And he took on this folklore persona, too, this wronged aristocrat who was inflicting vigilante justice. And if you look at pictures of Jack from the 19th century engravings, of course, he looks a lot like a proto-Batman. And I'm kind of wondering what sort of inspiration, if any, he had on the creators of Batman. I mean, he's got the scalloped black cloak. He has black boots. He flies and jumps.
Well, and you and I saw the Batmobile on Monday. Trick Kathy's car collection at Chick-fil-A headquarters. So that's.
So I like to think there's a connection.
Yeah, things
here
are coming together. But then Spring-Heeled Jack mostly faded from memory. He was replaced by these, you know, more generic ghosts and boogeymen like we think of. But in 1961, this story kind of gets a second wind when it's used as an example of pre-space age UFO visitation in a magazine called the Flying Saucer Review.
Seriously.
Which You know, I mean, if you want to buy us a subscription for Christmas, you totally could. But since the 1980s, the subject of Spring-Heeled Jack has been seriously studied by one man in particular, who's named Mike Dash.
So, the legend is obviously huge, but was there ever a real Spring-Heeled Jack, and what was he? So, just to give you some bearings before we launch into this very mysterious...
Before we spring into
the story. Our subject today could have been an alien, at least according to Flying Saucer Review, a supernatural being, a nobleman carrying out some sick terms of a bet, a series of copycats feeding off of a rural rumor, or just an urban legend.
And Sarah was saying that the cool thing about this story is that even if you walk away from it believing that nothing happened at all, it's still really interesting to take a look at the urban terrors and hysteria in the 19th century. Like if you think about ours, the Satanist cults at daycares thing that was going on. Was that in the 90s?
I think so.
Yeah. We had no Spring-Heeled Jack, but if you were back in England at this
it's
particular time.
Fun to look
time,
at weird stuff that happened.
Exactly. This is what you would be worried about. But first, we're going to tell you a little bit of a ghost story.
So our scene is set February 20th, 1838. It's less than a year into Queen Victoria's reign, and we're at Bearbinder Cottage in Old Ford, which is just east of London. So Jane Alsop, who's a young woman who lives with her parents, hears somebody ringing the bell at her family's front gate. It's a little late for visitors to be calling. It's about 8:45. So she goes out and sees the man and asks him what's wrong and could you please stop ringing the bell so loudly.
And he says, "For God's sake, bring me a light, for we have caught Spring-Heeled Jack here in the lane." So she hurries in, she grabs this candle, and she hands it to the man who she thinks is a policeman. But that's not what she sees.
At that point, he throws off his cloak, holds the candle up to his chest, and it illuminates this horrible face with red eyes and a helmet and tight-fitting white clothing. And then he shoots blue and white flames from his mouth and grabs her, starts to tear at her clothes and her skin with his metal claws. And somehow she escapes from him, and she runs to the door of her home. There he grabs her again, keeps on ripping at her hair and tearing at her clothes. Finally, one of her sisters opens the door and saves her.
So that sounds completely terrifying.
Yes.
Even today. And this is the first-hand account of Spring-Heeled Jack, which was published in the Times of London. And the story was followed up by two investigations, one by the newly formed Metropolitan Police and other by a for-hire detective, James Leah,
who's considered one of the most famous early detectives. But Jane's account was almost entirely backed up by her family as well as other witnesses. So she was believed to be an entirely credible witness, at least for most of the story.
Yeah, someone, I think, was it her cousin who said there was no flames?
A neighbor, yeah. So the one sort of major contested point, a neighbor said, yeah, I definitely didn't see any flames, even though, you know, I heard someone ringing at the bell.
But the rest of the creepiness
everything
happened.
Seemed to add up pretty well. But that's not where our story is going to start. Because months before Jane's attack, rumors of a mystery assailant had already swept through the countryside.
And they started in Barnes, a village southwest of London, in September 1837, where a, quote, ghost, imp, or devil was believed to be attacking mostly women. And over the next 2 months, there were reports from more than 24 other villages of a similar phantom. So the story spreads. Of course, it's exaggerated. Maybe it was all made up. Serious newspapermen and police who looked into these tales couldn't find anyone who would actually admit to having seen the assailant. It was more like, oh my gosh, yes, I've heard, you know, you should go ask Sarah. And then Sarah would say,
come to me, I'd say, I haven't seen it myself, but go see old Joe down the road.
What about me, Sarah? You could have asked me about the imp.
Can't send him right back to you, Katie. So it seemed like everybody had heard of this ghost, but nobody had actually seen him. And the other thing, they'd look into some of these accounts and they'd find that sensational stories had pretty normal sounding causes. You know, they were seeing a mounted policeman or something. It wasn't Spring-Heeled Jack. But still, it seemed like something had been happening, because by January 1838, the Lord Mayor himself of London made public a letter he had received from, quote, a resident of Peckham, and this was published in the Times.
Some individuals of, as the writer believes, the higher ranks of life, have laid a wager with a mischievous and foolhardy companion, name as yet unknown, that he durst not take upon himself the task of visiting many of the villages near London in three disguises, a ghost, a bear, and a devil. The wager has, however, been accepted, and the unmanly villain has succeeded in depriving seven ladies of their senses.
Okay, so this is putting forth this wager idea, and sketchy rumors start flying all over the countryside. But possibly something really is going on here. I mean, if the Lord Mayor thinks that it's worth publishing, you never know. The gentleman in disguise story seems half plausible. And then in February, we have our first firsthand attack, which is the Jane Alsop story from earlier. In that case, the principal suspect is this carpenter named Milbank, who's a squat man. He doesn't really match the description that Jane gives of her attacker, who's this imposing, enormous fire breather with a helmet. But Milbank admits to being so drunk at the time that he can't remember what happened.
Oh.
And Jane and her sister are both very adamant that the assailant was not drunk. So,
when how would he be a fire breather if he was?
Well, and that's the other thing. If we're gonna take the fire breathing seriously, it's very dangerous to do fire breathing unless it's absolute calm.
Right. Because you've got everything under control and you're doing everything correctly.
The wind blows the wrong way and your face explodes. It's pretty dangerous. It would be especially dangerous to do while you were drunk.
But still, now it is Spring-Heeled Jack fever, and not just in the countryside, but in London, too. So we're going to move on to talk about a couple of attacks.
And these are the classic attacks from,
quote unquote.
Yeah. a short string of events from 1837 to 1838. So the second one was 5 days after Jane's attack, and again it was in the East End of London. The assailant knocked on the door of a house, and when a servant boy came to the door to open it, Jack frightened him so much that he started screaming his head off, and Jack was forced to get out of there before anybody heard.
The third classic attack was when Lucy Scales and her sister were walking home from their brother's butcher shop down Green Dragon Alley, which sounds very Harry Potter. They're ambushed, and the assailant shoots blue flames and then flees. And this story doesn't gain as much attention as Jane's for some reason, but I think it's a pretty good one.
Possibly because Jane was the daughter of a pretty well-off family, Lucy less so. So at this point, we enter the copycat stage, and you have angry men calling themselves just standing up in the bar and saying, I'm Spring-Heeled Jack, and attacking women, and boys dressing up as Jack to play pranks on each other. Some men are arrested, but people are also so obsessed by the story by now and frightened of it, that nearly any mystery assault gets added to Jack's rap sheet. So it doesn't matter if it doesn't exactly follow the pattern for what we've seen. If it's mysterious, it must be Spring-Heeled Jack.
When it goes on for years and years, his name is associated with later attacks in the Midlands, in the home counties, in Middlesex, in Peckham and Sheffield, and famously in Aldershot in 1877, which is where a British army camp was stationed. And that's where he would lay his chill hand over an isolated sentry's face and then bound off on giant springs. So apparently he's gone from fire breathing to chill hands.
Chill hands sounds
super creepy.
But
again, this is nearly 40 years later.
Yeah, so it's extremely, I mean, I think we can discount that there would be one person carrying out all these attacks. That would be pretty ridiculous. But the last major Spring-Heeled Jack appearance occurs in 1904 in Liverpool, and he's more athletic than ever. I mean, he's practically flying by this
point. He has better springs.
His springs have improved considerably over the decades. And the account of this appearance is really sketchy. I think there had been rumors of a poltergeist in the neighborhood before, so everybody's on edge, I guess.
So the legend begins to fade away after this. So there's, you know, if there's something scary and fishy going on in your village, you're no longer so inclined to blame it on Spring-Heeled Jack. You might just go with a plain garden variety poltergeist.
It's the ghost. It's the boogeyman, whoever. So what happened? We've got to look at this from a few different angles. One, was Jack just a convenient boogeyman to blame for weird events happening in the 19th century? Weird stuff happens. You have this convenient scapegoat.
Did opportunistic hoaxers and genuine criminals seize this MO of 1837 Jack and make this rumor real?
So you have all this gossip, and then you take on the costume and the conveniently jumping agility.
Pre-prepared crime.
You can go do whatever you want. Or did an original Jack terrorize the London area in 1837 and 8 before giving way to these lesser copycats over the next few decades? So according to the Oxford Dictionary National Biography, folklorists usually assume that Spring-Heeled Jack was just a combination of two urban legends. And there was one legend among the servants and the working classes, and that was Jack was real. He was a supernatural monster. So, like, he really was the devil or a ghost or whatever, appearing in disguises. Among the more educated people, there was a legend that it was a gentleman's wager, and there was this gang of well-off men with access to costumes and transportation and money, and they had made some sort of sick bet with each other to go around and try to frighten people out of their senses.
There was even a suspect for this theory, the very rakish Henry de la Poor Beresford, who's the Marquess of Waterford, and he's still regarded by some people as the chief suspect for the original 1837 to 1838 string of attacks, because he certainly would have had the resources. And again, it's possible that the lack of concrete information in rural areas from late 1837 comes from some sort of cover-up.
Cover-up the nobleman.
Maybe the first string of attacks ended because there was pressure put on the police not to investigate any further.
Or he was just getting... It was getting too risky to keep on doing this. The police couldn't be expected to cover it up anymore.
Or he fulfilled his bet.
The
bet. He was all done after those classic attacks.
Exactly. And the magazine Folklore, unsurprisingly, takes up this same position. I mean, it's called Folklore, after all, that Jack was just a rumor and part of this hysterical panic. He shouldn't be associated with any one person because he was a product. He wasn't a real flesh and blood man. But the research of the historian Mike Dash forces us to look at Jack a little more closely and consider a few different angles.
He spent most of his working life researching the Jack mystery, and his research has exposed some of the most notable secondary sources on Jack as being nearly complete fiction. So two famous Jack stories, that of the 1837 attack on the servant Polly Hill by a man she recognized as the pop-eyed gentleman who propositioned her earlier in the day, seems made up. And Sarah was saying that was notable because our rakish Henry
Waterford
was known for being pop-eyed. And another, the attack and murder of prostitute Maria Davis in 1845, also seems entirely fictional and has no contemporary evidence to back it up.
So instead of relying on these obviously questionable secondary sources of literature, Dash has pored through records and newspaper entries from around the country, from not just the Times, but all over the English countryside, even from the U.S., because there are other similar events happening here at the same period in time. So instead of relying completely on some of this obviously sketchy secondary literature, Dash has instead tried to go to the primary sources as much as possible, which in this case, there's some records, but it's mostly newspapers, just trying to figure out what the reporting suggests actually happened. And from his research, Dash has concluded that there were elements of reality and fiction in the case of Spring-Heeled Jack, which I think is an interesting way to look at it. So he's figured that there may have been a few Jacks in the first string of attacks from 1837 through 1838, but the attacks on Lucy Scales and Jane Alsop were probably done by the same person, and that person was probably also the same one who was responsible for those mysterious 1837 attacks in the countryside.
And after spring 1838, it was probably copycat Jacks who were using this ruse to play hoaxes or occasionally to sexually assault women. So there's rumor and panic around this whole thing, but there's also a kernel of truth. So where there's smoke, there's fire. Yeah, we think. But he also discounts two surprisingly popular theories going back to that UFO idea.
Yeah, so he's pretty sure Jack was not a UFO and he was not a supernatural ghost or devil. And educated people at the time never really thought he was a ghost or a devil. But over the years, people have claimed that Jack couldn't have been human because his talons, his fire breathing, his jumps would have been out of range for Victorian science.
Which sounds so funny to actually say to someone, no, talons, those are beyond Victorian technology.
I know, it does sound ridiculous, or fire breathing even. So Dash has, in his research, looking through all the papers, he's figured that jumping doesn't really have enough concrete evidence to back it up. It does seem, as you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, that people started to take the name Springheel Jack, which was applied to this assailant for his agility.
Yes.
Yeah. They started to take it literally. Like, he has actual springs hidden in the heels of his shoes, or he has India rubber soled shoes.
She would think would make it pretty difficult to get around the countryside, actually.
If you were actually wearing springs on your feet, I think it would be very difficult to not just wind up with a broken ankle and caught by the detectives.
So if we take the springs out of the equation, you can say that the fire breathing and the talons could easily have been produced in the 1830s. So if he did exist, we should assume that he was at least
a man. Yeah. So I think it leaves it open to you guys to think about it a little. You know, do you think he's a combination of an urban legend and some kernel of truth, or is it just an outright folktale? I do like this story because even if you are in the camp that assumes nothing happened, there's nothing real about it, you're forced to still examine the hysteria that's for real. That really did happen.
Well, and it's just cool because ideas of ghosts and things. I remember watching Poltergeist in middle school and being completely terrified. Stories of the supernatural they go back forever.
Well, yeah, ghosts like Jack have appeared long before 1837 and 1838. I mean, they just weren't attributed to Springheeled Jack. And weird stuff happens.
That we don't have an explanation for sometimes, even now.
Yeah.
All our science.
Sometimes it has a basis in actual weird people. Sometimes it's just folks getting hysterical and worked up about something.
But this is, of course, a story with a lot of research left to be done. Sarah advises that you get out your magnifying glasses and start poring over newspaper archives. But that brings us today to our listener mail.
So our first is real mail, and it's especially cool because it's made out of an MRE, a meal ready to eat box.
We saw this cardboard postcard among our letters. I was like, what is this?
It's pretty awesome. But it's from Nick, and he's in the U.S. Navy. And he wrote, "Dear Katie and Sarah, I'm sitting at Fort Jackson this morning, not too far from Atlanta, waiting for a plane to take me to Kuwait tomorrow and Afghanistan next week. I love the podcast and have listened to all the episodes you two have done. Through the miracle of the internet, I get to keep listening overseas. It would be great to hear about the history of Afghanistan, maybe Alexander or the Persians or the Silk Road. Thanks and keep up the good work."
So, no, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Silk Road, that's definitely one on our list. Darius, that's on our list. So
for you,
we'll see what we can do.
We'll move them up the list. Yeah, we've also got an email today about the Koh-i-Noor podcast.
Yeah, this one is from Jackie, and she wrote, "I just listened to your podcast on the Koh-i-Noor diamond and just wanted to mention one instance when the Koh-i-Noor appears in pop culture. I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and yesterday, before I listened to the podcast, watched an episode from the new series' second season. The episode, called Tooth and Claw, featured Queen Victoria traveling with Koh-i-Noor and claimed that the reason Prince Albert had it cut was so it could be used to save the queen from a werewolf." So, that's pretty great.
Yeah, I kind of wish we brought that one up. That would have been a nice, solid ending to that podcast.
Well, we have found that Queen Victoria ties into everything, and when we visited DragonCon this year, we also saw
lots of Doctor Who
costumes.
Yes, we even saw a stormtrooper crossed with Doctor Who, so yeah. Doctor Who accessories.
Couldn't pick between the two.
Well, how could you, really? So if you would like to send us some email, we're at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. We've also got a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed at Missed in History. And I think we have an article that would go with that letter, don't we?
We do. It's called How Werewolves Work. And it ties into the Kohinoor. I think it kind of ties into Spring-Heeled Jack.
Supernatural, yes. So you can search for that on our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.